I rest in His hand. An exposition of Genesis 39. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, October the 13th, 2010.
Well, you ever find yourself overwhelmed by the future, about what's coming up, uncertainty about what tomorrow might bring, or where the economy's going, or what's going to happen in the next few weeks? I think all of us have known at one degree or another that sense of impending doom. It may have been when you were younger and in school, it was because that big exam is coming up, and you thought, boy, that's the end of the world right there. And as you got older, you found out that really wasn't that traumatic. And then other things, family crisis and other things. But we know the sense of something looming over us and just the uncertainty of that. And we know what it's like to be filled with anxiety and frustration and fear. The question is, what is the proper response to that? See, we can't prevent it. We are frail children of dust. We are the sons and daughters of Adam. And so that's going to be a part of our life and experience. We're going to have things that overwhelm us. We're going to have the threat of things that tend to paralyze us. But how does our faith respond to that? What's the proper response of faith? This is where the doctrine of the sovereignty of God gets very practical. It's where our doctrine becomes a living truth. We affirm our belief in the sovereignty of God, but what does that look like on a practical level? If we really believe God is in charge, then how does that affect the way we respond to the trial and trouble that comes? To help us with that, I want us to look at Genesis chapter 39. Now, if you've been with us over the last several weeks, then you notice that we have been just marching through these texts, and we've been going chapter by chapter, and all of a sudden, we go from chapter 37 to chapter 39. So, if you're wondering, why did the pastor skip chapter 38? Just go back and look at it. It is a disturbing chapter. It has some delicate themes in it. There are issues that are difficult to deal with, and there's some interesting interpretation to those. I will deal with it very quickly, though. Chapter 38 is there for contrast. The story starts up with Joseph, and then all of a sudden, as the story really gets started, we have this insert about Judah and things that happened with him. I think the reason that's there is to set a contrast, because we're going to find that Judah handled things very differently from the way that Joseph handled them. So I think at least part of the reason why, under the inspiration of the Spirit, Moses put the story from chapter 38 where he did, is to set a strong contrast. It's there to remind us of the profound difference between the one whom God chose and God was at work in, and the life of another. Judah married an unbelieving pagan wife. He was unfaithful in some of the most solemn commitments. He became as pagan as the pagans around him. And he had everything to lose in choosing the way he chose, and yet he chose rebellion. In opposition to that, Joseph has everything to gain by choosing sin, and he refuses. So as we walk through the story of Joseph, there's a contrast with that. Our focus is in chapter 39. We're going to look at verse 1 down through verse 23. We're going to give an overview of the whole chapter. And here's what I want us to see. The person of faith confidently rests in the assurance that his fate, his life, his future, his well-being is in the hand of a sovereign God. The way you and I are supposed to respond in faith to trial, trouble, anxiety, fear, frustration, that sense of impending doom, is that we are confident that our fate, our future, our life, our well-being is in the hand of not some cold, indifferent force, but a sovereign Father, a God who knows us, a God who loves us, a God who cares for us, a God who has our best interest at heart. And so we find peace. We find comfort. We find assurance. See, I don't know what the future holds. You don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We have no idea what trials and tribulations are going to come next week, but God knows. And so our hope and our confidence then lies in Him. That's what it means to trust in a sovereign God. It's a very practical thing for us to believe in. Three things I want to call to your attention out of the story of Joseph. First, in chapter 39, verse 1 down through verse 6, the person of faith yields to God's timing. Now, Joseph had been brought down to Egypt by and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him. And he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Think with me for just a minute. As best we can determine, Joseph was about 17 years old or so when his brothers sold him to that group of traveling salesmen. As we try to put the math together through other clues that we have in the book, it comes out that he is in Egypt for about 11 years. He's 17 when he's sold. He's taken to a foreign country and then sold again. He's taken from a life of luxury. He is the heir to a great fortune, but he finds himself a slave in Egypt. He finds himself a slave in a land where he does not speak the language. He has no understanding of their culture. Now imagine what that would be like. Imagine how you would respond to that under any circumstance, but especially if you're a 17-year-old kid. Egypt is an ancient culture. By the time that Joseph arrived in Egypt, Egypt had already had a great thriving kingdom for over 1,000 years. The Sphinx had already been carved, and some of the pyramids had already been showing the effects of the passing time. So some of the pyramids were already in decay by the time that Joseph came along. It is an ancient kingdom, a great and wealthy kingdom. There was no serious threat to its dominion. And so the resources were applied to the arts, to math, and to science. Of course, the architectural feats of the Egyptians are marvels to the world. The Great Pyramid at Giza had a base that was about 755 feet on each side and 481 feet high. Each of the stones weighed about 2.5 tons, and it covers 13 acres. It's an amazing thing that they accomplished. And they had been standing for 700 years by the time Joseph got there. I mean, this is a radically different culture from what he had known. It is a very different world. It was also a pagan world. They worshiped the sun, they worshiped the Nile, they worshiped stars, and they worshiped countless other gods. Now, if you're 17 years old, and you're sold into slavery, and you're taken down into that culture, and you find yourself in the home of a very powerful, influential leader in this pagan country, everything in your circumstance says you need to go along. If you're going to survive, if you're going to have any success at all, you're going to need to go along. When in Egypt, do as the Egyptians do. That's just the way the world is. That's going to be the pressure of the culture around you. The only way to survive is to go along, and yet Joseph refused. He continued to walk with God. He continued to hold to the teaching that he had embraced, the things that his father had passed on to him. His confidence was in the God whom his father wrestled with at Jabbok. And God rewarded that. Because he was faithful, God was faithful in return. God had made promises to his father and his father's father all the way back to his great-grandfather. And God honored the faith of Joseph. 11 years in Egypt before he reached any sense of prominence, before he had any real success. But he came to no success. He knew the blessing of God. He was faithful in every task assigned, but things didn't happen immediately. Now it's interesting. When I say he was faithful in every task assigned, I mean he was faithful to his master who assigned him the task, and he was faithful to his God. Not an easy thing to accomplish. Because you know as well as I do, in a work environment, sometimes you're forced to make a choice. Am I going to honor God or am I going to honor my boss? Am I going to truly honor God with everything or am I going to do exactly as I'm told? It's not always difficult, especially in a pagan culture, especially in the kind of world in which he was living. It would be very difficult, but he was faithful both to the task assigned by his master and faithful to his God, to the point that Potiphar recognized it was the Lord who was with him. And the reference is, he understood it was Yahweh. He understood that it was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob who had blessed him. That's why there is the reference to the Lord again and again. And the word Lord in your English Bible probably is in all caps. Because that's not just the title Lord, it is the name Yahweh. It is the name Jehovah. It is the covenant name. It is a very specific God. He's recognizing it's not just God in general. He's recognizing it's not just because he has been a spiritual person, but that he has been faithful to his God, and it is his God who is blessed. And as a result of that, he trusted more and more of his household to him. Now, the interesting thing to me is the implication of the text is that Joseph has patience. He is waiting on the Lord's timing. I always struggle with that. I think it was last time I asked you if any of you struggle with God's timing. And I acknowledged to you then, I struggle with God's timing a lot. Because I'm not a patient person. I'm not a patient person at all. I'm the type of person that wants things to happen yesterday. Especially if I'm hurt. Especially if I'm wronged. Especially if things aren't going like I think they're supposed to go. I have a difficult time waiting for God to work that out in His own time. I feel like He needs to get on the ball. I feel like He needs to do something. I need to see some action. The person of faith patiently waits on the Lord and His timing. That is the response of faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of the things you can't see. You can't see it. You can't feel it. You can't hold it. Therefore, you trust. What is it you trust? You trust everything's going to get better. You trust that everything is eventually going to work out like it's supposed to. You trust that the promise will be fulfilled. No, you trust in the one who made the promise. You trust in God, not the result. That's key. Your trust is in the God who makes the promise. Your trust is in the God who saves. Your trust is in the God who has revealed Himself, that He will work things according to His will and according to His purpose. That's the response of faith. The Apostle Paul said, I know whom I have believed, and I'm confident that He is able to keep that which I have committed to Him. I know Him, so I'm going to trust Him. on another occasion, he said, I'm confident of this very thing, that he who began the good work will bring it to the completion. His trust, it's a distinction, but it's an important distinction. His trust is not in the completion, but in the one who brings it to completion. To trust in the sovereignty of God is to trust in God. Our hope, our confidence, our peace is in the God who is sovereign. We trust in the sovereign one and we patiently yield to his timing. Second, beginning at verse 6 down through verse 9, the person of faith obeys the Lord no matter what the cost. Look at what happens. Now, did you note verse 6? So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Did you catch the last part here then as we start into verse 7? Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph faced tremendous temptation. And I want to point out at least five that I can think of in reference to this passage in verse 6 down through verse 9. First, it's a natural temptation. He was a young man with raging hormones, and sexual desire is natural. So that's one of the temptations that he had to face. Second, he was far from home. You notice it's easier to give in to temptation when you're away from home? Do you notice that businessmen fall when they're on a trip, when they're away from the confines, when some of the safeguards are not in place? Kids get in bigger trouble when they go to college and they fall away into immorality and sin. They have this newfound freedom, and far away from home they fall into it. But I think there's another reason. Because whether we'd ever want to acknowledge it or not, whether we would ever use the words or not, I think we do often operate at a practical level as if we believe in a tribal God. He's God, and he's here. But when I'm over there, he's not really God there. When other people aren't watching me, I don't know anybody that would say, yeah, that's the way I think. But in practical terms, it's the way we act. She was an important woman as another source of temptation. It was to his advantage to stay in her good favor, as we're going to find out as the story progresses. It came following an important promotion. It would have been natural to say, I got to do whatever I have to do in order to protect this promotion. I don't want anything to happen that's going to take this away from me. Temptation came. And the implication of the text is, this is not a one-time thing. It was a repeated thing. She came to him again and again and again. And what is his response? I can't do that to my master. And I cannot do this wicked thing and sin against God. It's the same language we find in Psalm 51. Because Joseph understood, as David understands, all of our sin ultimately is a sin against God. All of our sin is an act of rebellion against God's sovereign will. It's an act of rebellion against God's command. It's an act of rebellion against God's will for the way we ought to behave and the way we ought to live. And so when I sin, I am committing treason against the God who created me, the God who redeems me. And he said, I'll have no part of that. It was a difficult and a costly obedience. But that's the response of faith. Faith is willing to pay that price. Faith is the type of thing that when we're tempted in our job, when we're tempted in other circumstances, that we say, this may cost me, but I'm going to do the right thing anyway. It may cost me the job. It may cost me the opportunity for promotion later. It may cost me as far as reputation. It may cost me friendships. We can name any number of things that our obedience to God might cost us. But faith says, I'll pay that price. Because I would rather be obedient to God than to be disobedient under any circumstance. There are those things that overwhelm. There are those things that come into our life. And when they do, we have to find the faith, the courage to trust in God and to yield to His timing. And we find ourselves being willing to be obedient no matter what that costs us. And the third thing that I'd have you look, have you see is in verse 10 through 23 down to the end of the chapter. The person of faith rejoices in the presence and blessing of God regardless of his circumstance. So he refuses. I will not do this. I will not do this great wickedness and sin against God. And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, it was the continual thing. She came to him again and again. He would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled to go out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of her house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he's brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled to go out of the house. Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house. As soon as his master heard the words of his wife, this is the way your servant treated me, his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Joseph was a good and righteous man. And he refused the temptation. Regardless of how great, regardless of how easy it would have been to gone along, no matter how it would have profited him to do so, and nobody in that circle of influence would have blamed him for doing so, he refused. Now it's also interesting, and I think significant, that she came repeatedly and he said no, he said no, he said no, he said no. She took hold of him and was pressing, and he did what? He turned to her and reasoned with her carefully about why this was not a good... No, he ran. That is critical in dealing with sin. Joseph made the decision that he would not sin in this way long before she ever approached him. Because the time you make that kind of decision is before that time arrives. That's not the time to reason with sin. It's not the time to reason with temptation. He wanted no part, and so he fled. Trumped up charges, lies, falsely accused, falsely imprisoned. But the Lord was with him. And he prospered in all that he did. The person of faith rejoices in the presence and blessing of God regardless of his circumstance. Life in this fallen, broken world is often frightening. The future can be ominous. But the person of faith confidently rests in the assurance that his life is in the hand of a sovereign God. And so he yields to the Lord's timing. He obeys no matter what the cost, and he rejoices in the presence and blessing of God at all times. Well, that's great. But how in the world do I do that? How do I do that? Well, you don't do that. You trust God. You yield to Christ. In other words, you respond in faith, and this is something God accomplishes through you. It isn't something you do. It isn't something you're going to be able to accomplish. You can't leave here tonight and say, you know, that was a good passage, and I think that's a good thing to remember, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to trust in the sovereignty of God. I'm going to yield to His timing. You can't do that. But Christ can do it through you. It's by your faith. It's by your trust. It's by your reliance upon the God who saves. It is your confidence that the God who began the work is going to complete it. We're talking about the response of faith, not my determination in the face of, but my faith and trust in God who said, I will deliver you. That's not just salvation. That's sanctification. That's glorification. It's the whole process. How are we saved? By faith. How are we being saved? How are we kept? By faith. How will we be saved? How will we enter into glory? By the same grace. By our trusting in the God who is.
You've been listening to a Plowman podcast. Find us on the web at theplowman.org. The Plowman features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.